You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Savage Arms. Now, Savage has come out with a new model, and that model is the 110 Ultralight. At under 6 pounds, the 110 Ultralight is designed to combat elevation and the elements while maintaining the performance of a factory blueprinted Savage 110 Action. This comes in a variety of calibers. It has a gray AccuFinish stock with adjustable comb height. This is an awesome rifle, and basically Savage is at it again. These guys have done amazing things in the past, and now they're doing amazing things in the future. If you want to find out more information about the 110 Ultralight, visit savagearms.com.
Welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye.
This is your number one resource for all things land.
If you're interested in conservation, habitat management, hunting strategy, and rural real estate, this is the podcast for you.
All right, guys, welcome back to the Land and Legacy Podcast. Adam here.
Matt is here live on
back porch once again.
Back porch sitting.
Yep, back porch, summer breeze blowing.
Might be able to hear a little bit.
Sahara dust floating in the air.
If you hear us get choked up, it's just that dust.
Yeah. Happy 4th of July.
Yeah.
I think this is 4th of July weekend. What? Are they going to let us out of quarantine to celebrate our freedoms?
That'd be ironic.
Yeah. Yeah. So, happy 4th of July to all you guys. Celebrate this great country and all the freedoms we do have.
For the time being.
I say that like, oh, yeah, yeah, you know, you've been locked up, forced to wear a mask, and you're locked up in your house. So, before we get started, though, we just want to make a shout-out for one of our partners to make this podcast possible, the great people at Nyingwa Coffee. Dear friend of ours, came on the podcast. He helps handle our video production, but amazing coffee. If you guys are coffee lovers, check them out at Nyingwa Coffee. That's NyingwaCoffee.com. NyingwaCoffee.com. They've got the Fly Down Roast, Blue Spring, Blackwater, Deer Camp, I think. A lot of great blends. Actually, it's just Blue Spring, Blackwater, and Fly Down currently.
But they have the subscription model though.
That's what's awesome.
Where you plug in your email, you get stuff sent to your house, pretty much on an automated deal, which makes it super easy. You don't even have to think twice. Yeah. It's just coffee arrives.
They roast 2 days a week, and after roasting, they bag it up and ship it the next day. So you
fresh.
Got very, very fresh coffee. So check them out, NyingwaCoffee.com. All right,
you ready to talk some habitat?
Yeah, and this one's a good one because it kind of goes right in with most of our audience, I would say, are whitetail hunters first.
Yep.
And so it's kind of specific to whitetail deer, but can be true with so many other things. But it's overall habitat enhancement, habitat improvement, habitat restoration. We're just trying to fix bad landscapes. So we've been traveling a lot lately this spring, 2020.
Spring and all through the summer so far.
Yes. It doesn't even feel like, when did it
transfer? It feel like
when
summer.
When did it transfer to summer?
Although it's hot, it still does not feel like summer. Oof. It's weird.
It did 2 weeks ago or three weeks ago in Texas. It sure felt like summer.
I bet.
But we've kind of transitioned into summer, and we just coming off of a project in Iowa that we want to bring up. I don't know what this one will be titled, but basically, let's just sum it up with, which is more important?
Yep.
Cover or food?
And there's the can of worms right there. How many times do you see this argument or have this discussion of like, well, I can only do X amount, or if you wanted a property, if you were trying to set up a property, would you want more food plots or would you just want to focus on cover?
Yeah.
And it's like the whole, it's essentially, why are you choosing one?
Yeah.
Like why one?
It's like, what do you want tomorrow? Do you want a table full of Coca-Cola or water, or do you want a table full of food? Well, you got to have both to survive.
Yeah.
So, well, you can't really say which one you want.
Yeah. Why would you only be offering one of them?
Yeah. You got to have both. And the debate just goes on and on where you see it where, well, I think quality cover is more important for mature deers. Well, deers. Deer. But also, you see other guys say, oh, you own the food, you own the deer. And man, it's just, it's so much of that going back podcast where we say kind of defensive management where you try to do things to hunt the way the deer naturally use the landscape.
Yeah.
But what we try to do is enhance the landscape to totally change how the deer are navigating through it, to where it's just like I've told clients lately is, listen, you hired us because you didn't like the way things were.
Correct.
So,
or you knew that they could be better and didn't know how.
Yeah.
But that then
you just didn't like
changed.
What happened.
That's yeah.
You didn't like the way season's going. You don't like the way it's the whole direction of the property.
Ready for some change.
So you hired us to make that change, and you want to make that change as quickly as possible with the least amount of money possible. And so here we are. Throw out everything that we've done in the past, and we're fixing it. And don't think about how the deer. Don't spend all the time prepping for my consult or your consult. Going, this is how the deer navigate. Throw that out the window. It's changing.
Yeah.
They're going to do stuff totally different. And so we're not really looking at trying to manage the farm in a defensive mindset of, okay, this is the way the deer do, so let's try to pull them a little closer to our tree stand, or this is the way that they, this is where they bed, so we need to put food right there. No, we're going to enhance and make the best cover here or the best food here and totally change the way they've been using the property in years past.
One of the things that most let's say levels of the consulting the service would provide within one of the maps is a map that has got stand locations and recommendations based on, like, you know, wind and access and all these things. So that's cool, but I always have to remind myself of to tell that client, when you receive this, when you have these, the plan and all the maps and everything, when you get that back, you're going to look at that map, be like, well, that's the dumbest location. I would never hunt there. Like,
yeah.
That doesn't make sense. And it's like, correct, right now. Because the habitat hasn't changed.
Yeah.
Like, you haven't done these, you haven't implemented the plan. But when you implement the plan, I promise you, it will probably be a very solid location, general area that, you know, find out how to get here. I might not be able to pick out the or put the dot in the on the perfect tree
yeah.
from an aerial, but that area is going to be good because you don't come into a property with the preconceived notions. I want to hear your observations, but those observations don't dictate then the recommendation, let's say.
Yeah.
The recommendation is, well, we need these features here because then deer are going to react this way, and then you can get here and harvest them. But it's not a, well, I'm just going to follow or allow deer to continue to do the same thing because then I'm not changing the property, the land, the habitat, the resources. I might be focusing too much on cover. I might just be focusing too much on food. Like,
it that's is
a
probably
balance.
It.
Yeah, it's a balance of all of the things.
Yeah.
But here's the, I don't know, I guess the caveat is, if you focus just on cover on your property, or you focus just on food, and you have the best food or the best cover in an area, you still probably will have success. And I think that's why you have this debate, is because
for sure.
you chose to pick one, improve it, and now it is probably some of the better cover. So by default, wildlife are reacting to that, spending more time on your property. And then you see that as success. But it's like, well, do both.
Yeah.
Same thing with food.
Yeah. If we were to play this game and you had, 100 acres and you're like, I can only choose one. Which one are you going with? Cover or food?
Don't put me in. It'd be totally based on the neighborhood.
Yeah.
What's happening outside of that 100 acres?
Yeah.
That would be the determining factor if you said you're only doing one.
Let's say it's mixed.
And I said, I wouldn't buy that place.
So the reason I asked that is, let's just kind of paint a picture of what a lot of guys deal with. There's mixed ag, mixed timber, mixed pasture.
Right.
The deer do okay just living out on the landscape because there are crop fields. There's alfalfa fields. There's timber. There's
clover mixed in the pasture.
Whatever. Yeah. And I'd say, okay, when is like, you know, are you a typical deer hunter where you try to take a vacation late October, November, sometime, the rut? Then I would say I would put more value on quality cover than I would food. But if you can't take off other than some week during December when it gets really cold, then I'd put more value on food.
Mm-hmm.
Or early in the season. Let's just say September 5th when it opens up in Kentucky or whenever. I'd say, you know, that early season food may be more important.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're looking at that rut time frame, then I think it's hard to put a number on it, but I'm just going to basic guess. I would say over 75% of farms that we visit don't have what I would call premier cover that we're looking for.
Either quality or adequate cover. Even adequate cover. Like where it's like, yes, a deer would feel secure there if they chose to bed down in it. And right now, it's very deceiving because you go out, there's green, there's, you know, full leaf out, blackberry, brambles, you know.
Go on a river bottom and it's chest high wing stem and
all of it.
Wild golden glow, stuff like that, where you're just like, this is amazing.
It looks so fantastic, but
you can't see through it.
That's not what happens in the fall. And it's like, you have to remember, go back to where's the cover then? Like, where is it at that point? And again, most of the places don't have just adequate cover on a property.
And that's where you'll see trail cam pictures get sent to you. Look, check out this buck. He's only showing up at night. He's nocturnal. Well, is he nocturnal because you overpressured him? Or is he nocturnal because he's staying 2 miles away and that's where he beds?
Yeah, I think that is a very, 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 very likely occurrence that it is way more a distance away or travel than it is a pressure thing.
Absolutely.
Especially right now. Like in the middle of the summer.
Yeah.
You drive by just about any field across the entire country, there's deer out there right now. It's like it's not like a nocturnal thing.
Yeah.
It is most likely in that case or that situation. You don't have the cover where they're choosing to bed down or the resources and they pass through and it's just how so happens to
be. When they wake up when they stand up in the evening or afternoon to start foraging,
browsing,
they have to make one big old loop just to get to your place and step in front of your camera. Yep. And if you're experiencing that, then it may not be that they're nocturnal. It's just the fact that they're too darn far away from your farm when they stand up in their bed.
Mm-hmm. So their core area is not obviously in proximity to your farm.
Yep.
Or there's a little bit of overlap, and therefore that time frame is likely a ton or majority at night. But if you have the better resources of both food and cover on your property, you might be able to encourage or see that core area shift.
Yep.
Wow. Now there would have be way more potential for daylight activity than there would be for just straight nighttime activity. It's like legal means of hunting, right?
Yep.
When do you kill deer? During the day. So if all you get is nighttime pictures, I don't get excited about it. It's cool that deer would be in the area.
Yeah.
But daytime pictures means that deer is most likely bedding on a property or in close proximity to where you're monitoring that area, because the time frame and where they're, you know, walking the most up on their feet is they're crepuscular, right? So it's morning or early morning, dawn, and dusk.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's just science. Like, they're close. They're close.
In my opinion, nighttime pictures are more a problem of quality cover than they are pressure.
Yes.
And we'll lead into, you know, where that comes from, or that once again, another debatable topic that really you see it so many times where deer are nocturnal, they're moving at night. I say nocturnal, you're just getting pictures at night. Right. We don't know if they're pressured or what the reason is. And it's because we've lost our viewpoint, maybe because we put on deer goggles, but we've lost the view of what adequate or quality cover is to a whitetail deer.
Mm-hmm.
One of the big ones that you would find, and that's the reason for this week's topic or podcast, is cedar thickets. That has really come on to be, you know,
I say cedar thickets, we're like monocultures of expansive areas, not the cedar tree.
No. Like,
we'll point that out, not the cedar
maybe,
tree.
Let's just say an acre or more of cedars.
Sure, that's fair.
An acre or more of eastern red cedar.
Which is abundant across the landscape.
Yeah.
You can find that every county. That happens.
In the Midwest, it's really a huge problem.
Yeah.
I forgot who I was talking with. Somebody told me that out east, they don't have cedar trees, hardly ever. But here in the Midwest, Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Nebraska, South Dakota, Iowa, southern Minnesota, Missouri, Wisconsin, Illinois.
I've even seen a lot in Tennessee, Arkansas, and Kentucky. Arkansas, yeah, for sure.
Down south.
Yeah. Mississippi.
It's got great stands of eastern red cedar. And it's almost now to a point where you see it so much that you can make the caveman idea, you know, I see fire, fire warm, fire cook things, fire good. That I see deer in cedar trees, cedar tree good.
We're smarter than that.
Yeah.
We're smarter than that.
I would hope so.
Come on.
And so then you can kind of step the next step of the caveman mindset. Ooh, I see deer, I see cedar tree good, deer like cedar tree, more cedar tree mean more deer. And then it's like, and that's when you see this. There's a lot of people in Nebraska and the prairie states that would say, that's where all the deer are. Well, sure, I don't disagree. Yeah, you know, I would totally suspect that you would find some deer in cedar thickets in those places. Where's your shrubs? You bush hog them out.
Oh, you spray 2,4-D on all your pastures?
Yeah. Oh, you sprayed out the fence lines and you got rid of the shrubs. Okay, well,
if all it is
grass and then cedar trees, of course.
Of course they're going to be there.
I think it's Craig Harper who really has kind of taken, he made that phrase with QDMA, and it's one of, it's so good you can't make something better. So you see a homeless man eating out of the garbage, does that mean the garbage is good, or does that just mean that's the only source available?
Yeah. And I think that we need to, if you will, it's rather elementary in a thought process to say, I like cedar trees or manage around a single species. Like, you wouldn't manage and have an entire farm and say, all I'm going to have is soybeans.
Yeah.
And then you're golden. Like, no. And all your cover or the best cover on a property shouldn't just be a monoculture of cedar at all.
No.
Because you're relying on one thing.
It shouldn't even be all American plum, which we love so much. Because if you take a Walmart parking lot or a Sam's Club parking lot or any of the big box stores that have a huge parking lot, and you go out and you carve out an acre and you plant and fertilize and you make an amazing field of soybeans, that doesn't mean deer are coming in there.
No.
And it doesn't mean that if you go out and you do the same thing with cedar trees and you plant all that thick cedar trees, you might have deer in there, but they still have to leave to go find food.
Yes.
You can't, you should not manage your property to where it's one, okay, my food plots are soybeans, okay, my cover is cedar trees, and my odd areas are switchgrass.
And I will say this, though, too. Hardwood stands of that are older than 15 years, and this goes probably throughout much of the country. If your hardwood stands are older than 15 years, it's not adequate cover anymore.
No.
It's not.
No, trees don't mean cover.
Right. So you can't, like, let's look at Iowa. You know, it's not just cedar trees. You know, not there's a lot of hardwood draws. There's a lot of north slopes that are timbered and, you know, little woodlots and stuff everywhere. But
yep.
But you can't say, okay, well, my deer don't just stay in the cedars, guys. They stay in the hardwoods. Well, majority of all the hardwoods that I see in Iowa, it's way older than 15 years. Okay, so then that's not adequate cover.
No.
So, again, you're still lacking cover. If you want truly to have the cover, we're talking higher stem count areas, we're talking brambles, and we're talking shrubs. That produces
height
quality.
Height difference, too.
Sure.
Yeah, you know, you said stem density, higher diversity of plant communities, but also a diversity of plant heights to where you have some of that young forest mixed in, or it could be shrubs mixed in, but you have a lot of vegetative growth 5-4 foot down.
Yes.
And I think that really lacks, because I don't know if you can hear that. It seems like if you go out and you just clear cut trees, snap your fingers and it's just like, they grew so fast.
Yes.
They're 15 foot tall already.
Yep.
And that's where the maintenance was not included in that. You cut the trees, you didn't do fire, you didn't do some sort of mechanical management, but you just let it grow. And trees that have full sun, they grow much faster than trees that are in closed canopy forest competing with everybody.
Yesterday, I sent out a management plan to someone. The property was, when I got there, I was like, oh gosh, this thing was open field, like not that long ago. I could just tell from the species, it was very, this was on the East Coast, so it was very eastern red cedar, a lot of black locust,
really?
Just everywhere. Yeah. So out there, that's a lot of the first woody successional stuff that comes back, but it was very dominant, and as I was like, man, this was open pasture at one point. So I went to Google Earth, found the property, backdated it, 1994, all the open areas, all the areas that were thick cedar and autumn olive, and a lot of the areas that were black locust.
Matt, stop. We don't curse on this podcast.
Wide open.
Yeah.
I mean, that
like
was...
Like pasture.
Was, pasture, yeah. That was 20, been 26 years ago.
Yeah.
And now, you would look at them and say, someone would say, this is mature forest. Not knowing what they're looking at.
Yeah.
But
or someone would look at that and say, quality deer habitat.
Right, right. And it was, well, no, this is not the best species that we want. It's thick, but it's not offering any food value.
Yeah.
Because the black locust was way, way tall at this point. They're not eating cedars. And then we had autumn olive.
Yeah.
But it wasn't quality cover in the right stages, in the right composition, nor the right species. But it was, comparatively speaking to other hardwood stands in the area, denser.
Yeah.
But cover and quality cover or adequate cover is not just a factor of how dense is something. And I think that's why we see when you offer something next to it that has both a better species composition of diversity, as well as height differences, as well as food value, that area that you once thought was cover would now become a void.
Yeah.
Because now you have something that actually is higher quality cover.
Absolutely. You don't know what you don't know.
And if
you're in a neighborhood where the best growth, the best form of a shrub that you have is an invasive species like autumn olive, it's easy for you to look and say, well, they love autumn olive. Well, because it's the only thing that replicates a shrub or that's right. in shrub form that's anywhere in the neighborhood. So, of course, they use it. But you can't tell me that a shrub or that autumn olive is the best cover when there are no other shrubs or young forest or old fields around because you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah. There's not a comparison, right?
No.
You don't have that side-by-side over, well, deer are preferring this over that. It's just this is all that they have.
Yeah. McDonald's so has default. The best burger. It's the only burger I've ever eaten, but it's got the best burger. Well, how do you yeah. know it's the best burger when you never tried anything else?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. yeah. So you know, we...
And I'm not even sure it qualifies as a burger.
What is that, Beyond Burger now?
Oh, goodness, yeah.
But it, you know... We live oftentimes very unexposed to quality habitat, both food and cover, as we just generally traverse across given landscapes, yeah. right? It doesn't matter if you're in the southeast, east, northeast, midwest, generally speaking, because you know, your general landowner, your neighbors, just people in general, are not devoting themselves to sound management practices, frequent disturbances. So therefore, we don't have quality cover and a lot of quality native forages out there to study off of.
Yeah,
what we're looking at, what we've been kind of forced to see is these isolated pockets of quality cover and testing and science through those, but then everything else around it, yeah, there's still deer there. Again, they're generalist species, but like the vast majority of people are underexposed to quality.
Yeah.
And so it's difficult to manage and get there if you don't know what it looks like.
Yep.
But
and you don't know how to gauge it. Like,
yeah, yeah.
There's...
What's the scale here?
Yeah. What? How do we know what's good, bad, ugly, non-existent? Like, what's?
I had a client. I can't remember who it was, but they were just very straightforward. Like, hey, you're not going to offend me, this and that at all. But I just want to know like where this property stands. So he would ask questions like, hey, where on a scale from 1 to 10, what would you rate this cover or this diversity or this old field expression or this food plot, whatever. And they look for honest answers. And it's like, okay, it's this or it's that. And
yeah.
But I was again, forced, but wanted to reiterate, I'm not expecting it to be a 10.
No.
We're, that's why I'm here. Like, we're here to
make it
a 10. If it
was a 10, why wouldn't you hire me?
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, I see 3s, 4s, 5s every day. Like, yeah. like I, my job
really?
Is to take
you're,
it.
You're seeing fives.
It's like,
where?
Yeah. It's like, let's take it from a 3, 4, 5. Like my job is there to take it to that 9, 10, 8, 9, 10 ratio.
Yeah.
Like that's the purpose here. So, but I think it's important to note that like, until you really, really go and search for that quality stuff. And I think most people do know, like when they step into an area, and we've said it on the podcast, like this area is bucky. It's like, gosh, I'm expecting to jump a deer at any point.
Yeah.
Most of those areas are not, again, abundant on the landscape. But when you get to them, it's almost like a sixth sense of, ooh.
There's somebody close.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I need to back out of this. Like, yeah. That's good. But why is that so underrepresented in an area? But
yeah.
I guess getting back to, you know, the recent trip in Iowa.
Yeah.
We spent a lot of time.
Oh, before we do that,
yeah.
You brought up something. You said something that stirred a thought of mine of landscape manipulating to try to encourage deer travel
mm-hmm.
and passing and bringing them into range or whatever. And it kind of like, that's step 2 or 3 for me, like in the way we do it. Like if we show up to a property, we're not looking, you know, we can, and some of this will help, but it's not, okay, you have this target buck on your farm right now, and he's going to be really big this fall. We're here to completely change the overall health of the deer herd, because we want to change the entire farm to where in the future you have much better deer quality because you've fixed the habitat to where now we have way more food available, way more cover available, to where we're not really manipulating and trying to encourage a bed here or travel this way. Now that comes with some of our layouts.
It's but all by default. Like, it's just going to happen. Like, you have to first, you have to build a house on a foundation.
Yeah.
And that's why we're going to a property. I know that this is a good location, but maybe when we completely change the property, this location that you experience great hunting success at right now, maybe this is going to be a secondary. Like, that's the kind of stuff we're talking about. It's like you don't start a house at the attic, but hunters are so, I say attic, let's just call it the roof.
Yeah.
I don't want to say one of the last things.
You don't pick
in the
shutters before you pick the.
Like, you cannot go to the last thing that truly will matter, and that's the kill, if your foundation is horrible. So you have to start at the property level and the habitat offering and work from there up. But when you do all of that work, those great hunting spots, like, they're already there. They're just built in. You just do it. You don't have to create these
micromanage.
Little,
like, if you're focused on trying to put a buck
in a 30-yard area
in this specific spot against this specific item or whatever, you're missing big scale management with meeting, because we don't want to just like take that deer that's currently on your farm and say, okay, he's going to be right here now. I want to change it to where, yeah, he's going to still be on this place, but his lineage is going to be much healthier. There's going to be much more deer available, and you're going to get much more enjoyment out of your property because we finally restored the habitat.
Yeah, and I don't want to hear about one. Like, I want you to do this. I want you to follow through the plan, and you call me in 5 years and tell me I've got 4 deer at that age class and that are bigger than that number one that I first called you at, and the amount of threes and fours, you know, down in procession from there are bigger than I've ever seen. Bigger, younger deer than I've ever seen.
Yeah.
So
let's get into the cedars.
Yeah, let's were in Iowa.
In Iowa, where cedar trees are like mean mega giants. Right?
To some people, yeah.
Cedar trees mean mega giants.
And we were here recently, so it is like mid to late June.
Yeah.
And so what that means, and why we're saying that, why it's important, is not only is all the hardwoods leafed out, cedar trees, obviously they're
evergreen.
There's
vegetation everywhere.
Absolutely everywhere.
Almost everywhere.
Yeah. So there, you know, old fields are rocking, you know, there's whatever CRP is up and going, rocking. Corn is hip high. Soybeans are shin high to knee high, maybe. Food plots in the ground. Clover is rocking its socks off. Alfalfa's looking good as ever. Hay fields have been cut once, and now, boom, filling in under, if you will, understory of what clover's in there. Legume heavy hay field. So there's food
everywhere.
Literally everywhere.
It's very green in Iowa right now, northern Missouri, and that region of the world.
Where everyone's got their eyes set, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's got a bullseye on, man, I'd like to hunt there. I'd like to be in that. Food everywhere.
Food everywhere. Cedar trees got great. You know, we've been fortunate enough. We've worked with a lot of clients, and we've been on not only, boy, it's getting even windier out here. I don't know if you guys can hear that or not, but
it is.
It's almost so bad I got to get a handkerchief out, keep the sand out of my eyes.
You turn that coronavirus face shield handkerchief into an eye cover.
I don't even need the Sahara Desert or Sahara Sand face covering because I already got my coronavirus face mask.
Yeah.
Mandatory to wear. So you see a lot of cedar trees in this part of the world, and it kind of gets correlated with, oh, that's where all the deer live. And, you know, we've been fortunate enough with all our travels. We've been on some real estate showings, sitting in the back, people may not be aware of what
quiet,
we do.
Observing.
And how many times do we hear a real estate agent or somebody rave about, oh, well, that's where the deer are. They're in those cedar, cedar trees.
If we're working with clients and they're looking at pieces, property, this, that, and if we're in the right areas, absolutely. 90% of the time we drive past, oh, well, there's where your cover's
that's
at.
Where
there's where
that's
the
where the
at.
Cover's at.
Goodness gracious. And you just... You sit there and you're like,
I'd say job security.
Yeah, but it's but spending a week there and being in, and I'd say in, I'm not talking on a property. When I say in cedar thickets, I mean on her knees crawling.
Yeah,
walking around, spending ample time in cedar thickets.
And that's
is the void
and
of
yeah,
deer.
It's just like, if it's bigger than an acre, that means, if it's 3 acres, that means they're using the fringes.
Yeah, and that's a great point. Again, we go back to the beginning of the podcast. Again, that random cedar tree or a couple spaced out in an area, that's fine. It's whatever. Just,
it's a native species.
Yeah, it's
we're going to get it with the next fire.
Yeah, no biggie. But we're talking about dense thickets.
Go back to 1994. In this area was prairie, and now it's.
I don't know. I don't know what you'd call it.
It's a void of life minus the cedar tree. You can go back 1994. And what is time? It's a infinite linear line. It just continues on into the future, and you can't. There's no management that says, chop that line off right here. We did everything we need to do. It's going to be wonderful forever. Because
no.
Time always moves forward. We age. Things are always getting older. They're growing. They're dying. There's new stuff growing back. We can never just stand still. And so these cedar trees, 1994, start the stopwatch. That's when it appears that they were wide open prairie. Start the stopwatch. Fast forward 2020. It's now 30-foot tall, 20-foot tall cedar trees.
Dense as, I mean, as
so
as you
dense.
Can get. As, I
yeah.
mean, like,
stacked.
Thick. Like, it's very difficult to walk through.
Yep.
Even deer are choosing not to.
Even
again,
the small
going,
ones that came up a few years
yep.
later
yep.
have died
they're
because
dead
they
inside.
Can't even get nutrients underneath
no.
that,
no.
underneath the canopy of those cedars. Like,
right.
we're talking so dense. And fortunately for us, this podcast. We're land consultants. Natural resource management is what we do every single day. And so this isn't observations that get made during deer season. We got those observations too. But these are observations that we get to make from January to December every single year that we're in business is, hey, here's cedar tree in June. Oh, here's a cedar thicket in March. And this is a dense stand of cedars that we could go into. It doesn't matter because there's so little activity that's occurring in the center of this thicket that I think we could find dinosaur tracks because there's no growth. There's no life.
There's very, very little. And like a lot of times you hear, well, you know, cedars or evergreens are great for birds to be able to build their nest in. It's like birds cannot fly through that.
Yeah,
I mean they
use the top
no way,
and turkeys roost in the cedar trees.
No,
like we could put a podcast together of the phrases we hear correlated with eastern red cedar.
Yeah, we probably could, but again, going back to let's say the title of the podcast, that does not equate to good cover. I mean, again,
no.
if you've got these large expansive areas where it is so difficult to even walk that. That does not mean that is quality cover. That again is a thought process where we've missed the ball of what consists of good quality cover in a given area. Because again, we know we step out of that. We either go essentially into crop fields, pasture fields, hay fields, or hardwoods, and most of the hardwoods have not been cut. Again, for, you know, in less than 15 years. So
yeah.
Where is the cover?
See, in...
Where, it's very difficult
kind of
to find.
Somewhat in the... If you're looking at stems and density, the cedars are better than the wide open. There's your fireworks.
Yeah.
The cedars are, I guess we're going to have to wrap up the podcast out here in the dark until 4th of July is over.
Yeah.
But those, that is why you would see deer in a cedar thicket. It's because the hardwoods is wide open.
Wide.
And as soon as the first frost hits, all that green vegetation that's hip, chest high is on the ground.
Yeah.
That's why you have to have woody vegetation in northern climates, because frost knocks it out. Snow smashes it down.
Yep.
It's wide open. And so then you go, okay, well, what's next up the line? Well, the cedars kind of keep some of the snow from getting all the way down and being thick, but at the same time,
it doesn't do anything good if you can't walk through it.
And then it's no food. Absolutely, on a scale of 1 to 10 on food, it's a 1, because we have seen, and the only reason I give it 1 is because we have seen areas where they do eat the needles, but
and
man,
we're
do they have to get hungry.
Specifically, eastern red cedar on
yeah,
that.
Yeah, not white cedar. This is not even about white cedar.
So we have to just consistently, I would say, develop our thought process to understand or better understand the species that you're dealing with and the species that you're managing, and know what consists of quality cover and quality food. But getting back to the I guess the real issue at hand is, which one do you manage for? Well, the answer is
both.
Both. Like, yeah, you don't go to a property in this region of Iowa and just say, yeah, cedars are fine. I've got a ton of crops in the area, and I'm going to leave some standing, and I'm going to shoot a big deer.
And hey, you can do that. That's been successfully proven.
That
but at the same
happened.
Time,
why?
Winter kill with high stress numbers. People just really worry so much about winter kill because it is an issue if you don't have adequate food.
Well, just what was it, 2018? There was some really, really cold sustained Arctic blast, and I don't know. People certainly lost deer in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and
Iowa,
and in
southern
Iowa.
Yeah, yeah, finding deer frozen.
Yeah,
yeah,
yep.
And. Why do you settle for mediocre with cedar trees? Because
I would say mediocre.
It's
I would say adequate and mediocre, I would say, are about the same line. I want quality.
Yeah.
So I don't, yeah. That.
If you want to shoot better than mediocre deer, make your habitat better than mediocre.
110%. But again, that, you know, we would not choose food or you know just choose food, because what if you are relying and you're on crops to be your only food supply on a property, and
yeah.
you've got dense cedars and you're like, okay, well, that's cover, or deer choose to use that during the late season. Well, what if something happens and the farmer makes a mistake? He kills the beans don't come up, beans don't make a pod. Beans are consumed too early. What happens in all those scenarios, or the farmer changes his crop? What happens when those instances occur? Now you're left with no food and cover that is really, 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 really crummy. But the only reason they were using it in the first place is because you had quality food there. And it gave you this false security blanket of knowing that, hey, if I focus on quality food, then I know that deer will just, you know, be fine, let's say, with hanging in and around some of these cedars. But it's why manage for one over the other when you have every ample opportunity, if you have any amount of acreage, to complete both.
Yep. It's beyond me, because it really, so many times when you go back to this past week in these cedar thickets, is we're looking at some areas where we crawled into them as a 12-acre chunk or an 8-acre chunk.
Yeah.
And they're using the very fringe of... The very fringe, I thought we, We do. We sure enough have a possum crawling through the yard right now.
Oh, sure enough. Look at that.
But, yeah, they're using the very fringe of that 8 acres or 12
right.
acres.
Right.
To where I don't know what that would end up being. Maybe an acre? Maybe.
Of usable space.
Of usable space. And then what's growing in the center? Anything to provide any kind of income? No.
Well, let's go and right then, back to that real quick.
Okay.
Real quick. Case in point. If you have density or thickets greater than an acre, they are a void, right?
Yeah.
The very center. So where is the activity going to be?
On the fringes.
On the fringes. So from an observation, if you're hunting and that's about the only time you're spending outside, what is that going to tell you if that's what you're observing? It's going to appear as if deer are coming out of there or working
yep.
along the edge of these cedars. Well, they're working along the edge because the entire acre that they're avoiding. It's not that they're enjoying these cedars. It's that they're avoiding the dead center of them because that area is not usable. You can't walk through it. But
yeah.
But if you're just sitting back and observing and not just walking and understanding that animal and what they need, you would say, dang, look at those cedars, man. They're coming out and around them. Look at that. That's awesome.
Yep.
But it's actually what you're witnessing is a void of usage in given areas. And when you have a void of usage, you have wasted space.
The only thing, you're not growing timber income. You're not growing crops. You're not really providing great habitat.
Paying taxes.
But you're paying taxes on it.
Yeah.
And in some states,
you're paying
that's a lot of money.
Heck of a lot of taxes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's the, you know, the phrase, the best of both worlds. It's the worst of both worlds because you're like, oh, I get to pay premium tax for terrible habitat.
Yep.
That's not even providing me anything.
Well, let's do the opposite because we've harped on Eastern Red Cedar. And again, not the tree, dense
monocultures
of expansive areas. But let's have the mindset play that game out of just food. What does that look like? Why would we not want to have just food?
Because then you get pictures of deer at night.
Everywhere right now in Iowa, in the area that we were at.
Yeah.
The entire thing was food.
Oh yeah.
But what happens during the fall? Obviously, crops, they're a commodity, right? They're getting
yeah.
harvested. So all those areas and all those fields where you're seeing deer pour into right now, wasteland
yep.
during hunting season. All the hay fields with all the clover. Yeah, you have a little bit probably in October.
Mm-hmm. A lot of times they get that last cutting and it doesn't get enough time to recover, so it's
yep.
really, really short.
You got,
so you get any snow and it's covered.
Yeah, that in October 5th, 8th, something like that, there's your first frost. Opening day is October 1, a
yep.
very small window where a hay field would be potentially really, really good in that area. So you take all the hay fields in the pasture, and you're like, well, crap, there goes a lot of the food. But then all the ag fields, again, they're harvesting. It's like, well, look at all that expansive area devoted to food gone.
Yep.
In the blink of an eye, and literally – in the matter of several weeks, you go from food everywhere to food nowhere.
Yeah.
So if you're relying solely on food in a given area, you could say you might have a limited resource if you leave that food standing. But what happens if you have both quality food or grain standing and that cover? Because if you're the guy who leaves the standing grain, sure, you're gonna have a lot of deer. But you and I both know from driving around and spending a lot of time on farms up there in that Iowa region, there's a pile of deer. So you're banking, if you're focusing on the food aspect, you're banking on having to leave an abundant amount of food on the landscape. Abundant.
Yeah.
Through the winter to feed that many deer.
Yep.
And we're not talking about, you know, 100-pound live weight does. We're talking big deer
yep.
that are consuming a lot. And the winter time frame, November through really the 1st of April, pretty rough, pretty
very
tough.
Very rough.
And so I would be confident to say if you're focusing on food near 9 times out of 10 or 9 years out of 10, you probably don't have enough to get through that time frame.
If you're providing a crop or food plot.
Yeah, you're not leaving enough in the standing grain. It's, you know, choosing, opting out of harvesting, you're most likely not leaving enough in a given area 9 times out of 10 to support the deer.
Yeah. So how do you fix that? And I think that's where this all comes down. You need to find cover that equals food.
Yep.
You need to manage your native landscape to where you can not only provide forage on those acres, but you can also provide cover on those acres. And that's where Eastern Red cedar thickets, if it's a full acre or more, that's a full acre or more that is very, very, very little food.
We can increase our productivity if we micromanage ourselves in the areas that we hunt. Sometimes, you know, you might be fortunate enough to have 250 acres to be able to hunt. You might be fortunate enough to have 800 acres to hunt and to manage. But when was the last time you looked over each and every acre of the 250 or of the 800 and evaluated all those acres? It's probably been a long time.
Yeah.
Because you had to consciously sit down and do that.
Yeah.
You have to consciously go out there and observe what's occurring on that and say, and be critical of it and say, okay, this is, ooh, actually, that's not quality cover. The last time I was in here, it was quality cover, but things have changed. That was 5 years ago now. Or that was good food, but really, I've got a lot of invasives coming back in there. I need to do something about that. But again, going back to the time thing, time changes stuff. But when was the last time you forced yourself to micromanage a property and be that critical of evaluating the resources there? It's not the discussion of food or cover. That's not even a discussion. It's both.
Yeah.
And we haven't even got to then the finer details or the finer points of spatially, what does that look like?
That's a whole nother podcast.
Yeah, a whole nother podcast. But it's like, that this is just step one of evaluating a property and saying what's most important. And it's everything's important. We can't be choosing one or the other.
No.
Because Iowa, as big of a destination location and as giant as some of these deer get, has weaknesses.
Major weaknesses.
Like stuff that, imagine if even some of the destination locations across the Whitetails Range that people just drool over to hunt. What if they were evaluated even more critically from a food and cover standpoint?
That'd be a fun podcast series to watch hunting shows and pick apart the habitat that the deer are walking through.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's like, I can already picture it in my head. We're going to go with so-and-so in southern Iowa, and I'm going to see smooth brome fields.
Yeah, for sure.
Or I'm going to go to Illinois, and I'm going to see bush honeysuckle understories.
Yep.
And, yep. Or I'm going to find the random deer with its head down in a CRP field, and I'm going to say, what is a deer eating in a CRP field with its head down? There's probably some spilled yellow stuff out through there. And yeah. So, you know, there's a reason why we keep talking so much about certain things in this podcast. It's like podcast 230 something, and we've circled back on many, but I don't think we've ever addressed which one's more important, cover of food. It's a highly in a habitat world, it's discussed just as regular as the hunting world, fixed blade or mechanical head.
Yeah.
Habitat world's like, well, which one should I focus on? Well, both. That's what you should do. And your cover could also mean food, and your food could also mean cover.
I mean, a Super Bowl team doesn't
have. Be careful
have,
here. We're not football players.
Well, I'm just saying a Super Bowl team doesn't have a poor offense and a super, super strong defense.
Well, sometimes.
No, they're going to have adequate or good of both. They're going to have weaknesses throughout the season that's going to weed them out, playoffs, whatever, if they're not top-notch on both ends.
When you put things under the microscope, and if there's the flaws always, you know, I played baseball growing up, so it's like you can't hide players. You could be a really, really stacked team and have a really poor right fielder.
They're hitting the right
field.
And
it hit, and it's like every game when it's important. Well, who gets all the action? The guy who's going to make all the errors.
Mm-hmm.
And you put them under the microscope, and you're going to find the flaws. And if you put Iowa and other states under the microscope, you'll find their flaws. And even if they shoot Giants in Iowa, you can put them in the microscope. And we always say, I wonder just how big they could really get. Because the habitat is pretty poor. And the stress periods are really tough.
Do you want to know why I think Iowa is so good?
I think we know why Iowa is so good, even though it's so poor.
There is a time frame in which there is so much food on the majority of the landscape in the state.
Yep.
And it corresponds with some very critical times.
Yep. When antlers just start growing.
It is feast. And then it quickly turns to famine.
Yeah, it turns to famine when antlers are already finished growing.
Yes.
And that's where it's like, it's
and feast. I'm not just talking, I want to say hear me clearly, but not just talking row crop.
Yeah, no.
This is not just a row crop situation.
Soybeans haven't even begun to germinate when antlers are started to grow.
Correct.
It's the amount of native forbs, native legumes that are growing, non-native pastures that have a very diverse mix in them.
Yep.
Thanks for the fireworks, buddy. Appreciate it. And,
grand finale. We're not there yet.
Yeah, they're still dragging on. And you know, we saw it a lot this week. It's like, man, there's food everywhere, even in the pastures. And you come down to southern Missouri, the pastures are almost 90% monoculture.
Yeah, of grass.
Of grass.
Very little.
They cannot eat. Diverse. Might as well be concrete.
Yeah.
And in Iowa, even the pastures are the mediocre pastures in Iowa that we saw are better than the best food plots in places, the best food plot a landowner may have in other parts of the country. More alfalfa or clover or tick trefoil or whatever other legume is growing, it's way better in that pasture than it was in what that guy would consider his best food plot.
The amount of tick trefoil and red clover growing in every single ditch that we passed along the road.
Unbelievable.
Well, I mean, we're talking knee-high easy.
Yeah.
That's not even generous. Like, that's just...
And browse all
over
average.
It. Yeah. But it's so ample, and it hits in a critical time frame. But what can we learn from that? To me, it's, wow, doesn't clover and a lot of an abundant amount of some
even
food
that stemmy
there,
red clover.
That was a joke by
we love red
listening.
Clover.
But very well addressed food at the right times of year can do incredible things.
Yeah.
But imagine if there was not this just famine time frame or this time frame where cover was very poor.
Yeah.
What if we had feast and then we had cover that equaled food throughout the remainder of the year?
Yeah. It's like a race. You start out in this race, and for three-fourths of the race, you've got plenty of water stops and plenty of people handing you water, but then the last leg of the race, no water to be found.
Mm-hmm.
It's very stressful, and you have to endure through it, and that's what we're doing to the deer. We start them off, and they're stressed in the late winter, and then spring hits, and there's food everywhere, and they start growing antlers, they start making fawns, having milk, And that goes right into fall, and then all of a sudden stuff starts getting harvested and the first frost hits, and it's like, uh-oh, buckle up. We're in for a long haul.
You know, look at the months. I would say 5 months out of the year, many of the areas are operating on a 8, 9, 10 scale of quality.
Yeah. It's very hard to beat.
Yeah.
Iowa in from March through
late March.
Yeah.
Through let's just call it October 1.
Yeah.
But we'll go mid October. 5 months.
That's longer than 5 months, ain't it?
I kind of in my head was thinking April 1, but whatever. Okay. 5 months, 6 months, but half the year is superb. Half the year is junk.
Yeah.
And it's like, golly.
Could you imagine?
If that other half the year was at a six or a seven.
That 7 months of green it's unmatched. There's not many states that can compete with that.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But then those other months are easy to beat.
Oh, yeah.
Because
very easy.
It's terrible.
Yep. Very,
now,
very
could you imagine if they were really, really awesome? And you could flip that and probably go to other states and say, for those 7 months, it's terrible.
Yeah.
And then during the winter, it's not so bad.
Uh-huh. And so. I think of a lot of the states that are probably more heavy timber or logging operations.
Yeah.
Not to say that woody browse and things like that would be offered in the wintertime is poor in the summer, but it wouldn't match that what we see from a quality in Iowa.
Yeah.
So there's that give and take and that balance back and forth for sure. But
diversity.
At 110%, it is just another example of having a diverse property. And I would like to do a podcast of, from a real estate perspective, how do you find diversity? What do you look for? Because honestly, you would have to essentially throw out all your just generic timber tracts. You know, like if you're wanting to buy diversity and buy a top-notch farm, I would probably say 80% right out of the gate, gone. I would be able to just exit. Like if you printed them off, said, Max, here's 100 properties. Guarantee you 80 of them right out of the gate. I would say, nope, 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 meh, maybe. That goes in the maybe pile.
Yeah.
A couple of them would probably say, I'd like to see that one on foot.
But oh, yeah.
Very few.
That's a grand finale firework right there.
Here we go.
Yeah.
I would say, yeah, let's go see that one.
Yeah. And then, you know, that's a great time to shout out that we are real estate agents. So we have the ability to help you no matter what state you're in, because we can find you the property, find you an agent to represent you right there, refer it over, but we can help you avoid those costly mistakes that Matt just mentioned about getting lured into the sell of
cedars are good. Look at these deer.
So anyway, guys, hopefully you can check us out. If you are interested in that service, just shoot us an email at info@LandandLegacy.
Well, they got to go to the
go
webpage.
To the website, landandlegacy.tv, go to consultation tab and shoot us a message there.
Yep, absolutely, guys. Appreciate you listening. Yep.